So was America ever a Christian nation? Were we founded as a Christian nation? What's the truth?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We're going to dig deep into American history. We're going to separate some myth with fact and truth. We're going to find out about the founding of America. Bottom of the hour, we'll be joined by author Robert Riley, who is a former special assistant to Ronald Reagan, has a new book out called America on Trial, talking about the founding of the nation, which is a big issue these days. We're going to talk about it, get your feedback, and then talk about an Australian professor fired for speaking the truth on his campus. He's calling for kamikaze academics. And then a question I'd rather not ask, but I'm going to ask, which is this. Will it take a President Kamala Harris to wake up the Church of America? Could a re-election of Trump give a false sense of security? What can we do about that to forestall that false sense of security? Michael Brown, welcome to The Line of Fire. Here's the number to call, 866-34-TRUTH. 866-34-TRUTH is the number to call. And I'd like your feedback. I did this Twitter poll, and let's look at the responses to it. I asked the question on Twitter, which statement do you agree with most? America was founded as a Christian nation, choice one. Choice two, America has strong Christian roots, but was never a Christian nation. Choice three, America was founded on hypocrisy, violence, and racism. And then another choice, other, please explain. So looking at this poll, the results have been very interesting so far. And the vast majority, over 90%, have voted for either founded as a Christian nation or strong Christian roots but was never a Christian nation. 45.4% of those polled said founded as a Christian nation. 46.2% said has Christian roots but was never actually a Christian nation. 4.6% said hypocritical and racist in terms of its founding, in terms of its history. I would say that if we had done that poll 6 months ago, the results would have been a little different. We wouldn't have had as many people with the opinion that America was founded as a hypocritical and racist nation. And then other people weighing in with different options, different choices, different perspectives. I want to throw something out to you in terms of blind spots that we have, in terms of things that are normal for our culture that we accept, and then we judge others. And then they look at us and judge us. In other words, a lot of stuff is relative, and we have blind spots. So, yes, there are absolute rights and wrongs, but we want to judge others the same way that we want to be judged as well. Let me give you an example of something. There was an American missionary working in Indonesia. He gave a test to his theology students, his Bible students, and it was multiple choice. So you know, you're always taught growing up with multiple choice. If you're not sure, just take a guess. It can't hurt. If you leave it blank, it's definitely wrong. If you take a guess, maybe it's one in four choices. You got four choices for each question. You got a 25% chance of getting it right. And maybe you know one or two of the answers definitely wrong. So maybe you have a 50% chance or even higher of getting it right. So when the test came back, this American missionary who's teaching Bible to Indonesian students, he noticed that many of them left questions blank. They didn't fill in an answer. It was multiple choice. So he's reviewing the test with the students, and he asked one student, why did you leave it blank? And he said, well, I didn't know the answer. And he said, using the American ethic, well, take a shot. Just fill in. That's what I've always done, right? To this day, multiple choice. If you're not sure, take a shot. Maybe you get it right. But worst case scenario, if you leave it blank, it's definitely wrong. So the student said, well, I didn't know the answer. teacher said, why didn't you then fill in the blank? Just take a guess. Just pick any of them. You could get it right. And the student was mortified, as were the other students. And he said, but if I guessed right, that would give you the impression that I knew the right answer on the test, and that would be a false impression. So for him, the Christian ethic was leave it blank. And the Bible teacher thought, your ethic is better than my ethic from a biblical point of view. Not in terms of who's going to do better on the test, but in terms of a biblical ethic. He talked about another situation. He was in a tribal village, and they were debating a situation. The elders of the church were debating a situation. Now, I'm going to tie this in with the founding of America. It's going to make a lot of sense to you in a moment. So he is talking to the elders of the church. They said there was a couple, a young couple, a Christian couple, and they eloped. They got married. Now they've come back to our church community, and they want to be reinstated. He said, well, they're married, right? I said, yes. Yeah. Well, of course, you're reinstated. What's the problem? And the elders looked at them in shock. Have you never read the words of Paul that said to honor and obey your mother and father, the Ten Commandments? Children, obey your parents. And that culture, parents would give blessing and approval for marriage. So they willingly disobeyed their parents to elope and get married. And in their culture, using the same Bible, they came to a very different view than someone from a Western culture. You used to just tell your parents, I'm going to marry this one or marry that one. All right, so what's my point? Are you a taxpayer in America? Yeah. Well, then you've been funding Planned Parenthood. This is reality, right? Planned Parenthoods get federal funding. Somewhere along the line, tax dollars used for abortion. We've been paying taxes, haven't we? Is it possible another generation will come along and judge us? You're like, no, but we're fighting for pro-life. We're fighting against abortion. You know, many of the founding fathers opposed slavery. And through our history, there's been a fight over slavery and philosophical differences, humanitarian differences, and various things like that. Yet our generation sits and looks with extreme judgment on the founding fathers. And slavery is inexcusable. I understand that. But this was the custom and culture of the day from whence they came. All right. But there was always argument over it and pushback among many, not to justify their behavior, but to say that was the norm for them. And then ultimately Christian faith prevailed and pushed that barbarous, horrific practice away. Well, we've been engaging in abortion, aborted about 60 million babies since 1973. And we sit down, look down our long self-righteous noses at the past and say, how could you do it? Well, how could we do what we're doing? Well, let's look at it from another angle. Let's not even think about paying taxes. How many of you that identify as pro-life Christians, other than cast a vote in relevant elections, actually do anything for the pro-life movement? How many of you have done anything sacrificial to save the life of an unborn baby? Well, then how can you sit in judgment on the founders for whom slavery was normal? And some said, well, you have to be more humanitarian about it or things like that, or release slaves upon our death, whatever things they came up with. But you hear my point. We're so righteous in our own eyes. We're so good in our own eyes. And we judge others. I say, let's use the same standard of judgment on all. At that point, it becomes a little scary. Okay, so what's your take? 866-348-7884. What do you think about the founding of America? Was it founded as a Christian nation? You go back to the colonies, and the colonies, in certain cases, were founded as theocracies. In other words, Jesus Christ is our king. Yes, they were under the kingship of England, but Jesus Christ is our ultimate king, you know, and things were enforced. Church attendance can be enforced. Other things can be enforced. There'd be penalties for various biblical violations, Sabbath observance enforced. And when the Old Deluder Act was passed, and this was early on in the colonies, 1600s, it was to ensure that if a community had at least 50 students in it, that you would start a school. And you'd have to have a school, or whatever the number was, 50 people in the community, that the reason you had to have a school was so the children could learn to read the Bible. Because in prior centuries, the Bible had been kept from the language of the people. And the church of the day kept it just Latin, only the clergy could read it. Plenty of the clergy didn't even bother reading it. Now, through Change and Wycliffe and Tyndale and others, the Bible is available in the language of the people. Luther's translation into German. So now anyone can read it. And they're saying, yeah, but you can't read it if you can't read. So we're going to establish in the colonies that if you have a certain amount of people in the community, now you must establish a school so that the children can learn to read, so that they can read the Bible. And the old deluder they're talking about was Satan. And they were saying, look, he kept the Bible away from us in the past. He kept it away from us in the past by saying, it's only the clergy, you know, just put that deception out there. Only the elite can read it. It's not for the common people, so you don't translate it into their language. Look, the first people who tried to translate the Bible into English were killed for it. John Wycliffe paid with his life. Tyndale persecuted and had to go underground and so on. That's for translating. Think of it, for translating the Bible into the language of the people. How unimaginable that the church fought that, but it did. So the colonists said, well, hey, Satan can win here. We have the Bible, but if we don't learn how to read, we can't read it. So there's no question that the colonies were founded based on strong biblical principles, but then some had deep mixture and hypocrisy because of the practice of slavery or other things they brought over, or an environment where you could have the Salem witch trials. I mean, they get blown out of proportion historically in terms of what actually happened, but still horrific to think back to that. So there was much that was biblical and much that was not biblical. There was a mixture there. But when you look back at founding documents and founding philosophy, so much of it flows from Scripture. So much of the early interaction of the founding fathers is quoting Scripture and documents going back to Scripture. So maybe the better way to say it is the nation had strong Christian roots or strong Judeo-Christian roots, and it was then understood that America would be a religious and moral people. As John Adams famously said, the Constitution was only made for religious and moral people. Is that how we should look at it? It's never been a fully Christian nation. Obviously, America has never been a fully Christian nation. But were we more Christian in the past, despite slavery, despite segregation? Were we more Christian in other ways? Many other ways, yes. Many other ways, yes. And that's the mixture of our history. That's the mixture of the human race. So what do you think? What's your take when you look at American history? You look at it with pride, shame, both? We'll talk about it. And then kamikaze academics, what in the world does that mean? Take that up.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the Line of Fire. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. 866-348-7884. Before I speak with my guest, Robert Riley, about America on Trial and a review of the founding principles of our nation, I read an article a few days ago about kamikaze academics. What? What are kamikaze academics? Well, kamikaze pilots, they were those who gave their lives, some willingly, some unwillingly. In the pressure of war, people enlisted to do things that never would have done. But they became weapons themselves. They would intentionally crash their planes into enemy targets, our targets, crash their planes, and the pilots would die in the process. So the concept of kamikaze is it's going to cost you your life to do this. What are kamikaze academics? There is an Australian professor, Dr. Peter Ridd, and he had questioned some of the politically correct statements being made about the Great Barrier Reef. Now, I know nothing about the Great Barrier Reef. I mean, the little that I read in the article, and questions about what's actually happening with it, and global warming, and how it's affecting the reef, et cetera, et cetera. Well, he went against the politically correct narrative, challenged things other professors were saying, and despite being in the university for decades, he gets fired. Well, he then takes the university to court, and the court sides with him. Well, then the university hires the top prosecutor they can, from what I understand. It bounces up to an even higher court. That court rules against the professor, and now he's appealing to the highest court, the equivalent of the Supreme Court of Australia. But here's what he called for. He specifically called for, quote, kamikaze academics. And this is what he said. He said that we, the older professors, he said it's only older academics like me who can do this. We have a duty to do this so that you younger academics can have a proper academic career where they can say tough things or even stupid things and still be forgiven. You need to be able to make mistakes. In other words, kamikaze academics means you speak out. You speak out regardless. You say what's right. You make your statements. You get your positions out and let the chips fall where they may. Here's how James Dellingpole described it on Breitbart.com. He said, kamikaze academics will comprise professors like himself, like Dr. Reed, willing to get themselves fired for expressing opinions which go against the standard leftist narrative. And in doing so, expose how little free speech and diversity of thought there now is in academe. Woo. Hang on. You go to school for many years to become a professor. And then you work hard as a professor. And in some universities, if you want to make your way up the ranks, you have to keep being published and being respected and listened to and so on. And now you're going to destroy everything you built just because you have a contrary opinion? Well, it's the Jesus principle that if you save your life, you lose it. If you lose your life, you find it. What does it mean? It means if you say, well, you know, I can't say if I say this, it's going to be too unpopular. If I do this, I mean I get my promotion. Oh, my tenure would be threatened and I need to be secure. You've lost your life. You're not standing for truth anymore. You're not standing on principle anymore. You're not standing in integrity anymore. You're just pragmatically saying, well, it's a little safer to do that. Then anything could happen. The university plunges into all kinds of error. Let's just say you're in Germany and the university wholeheartedly endorses Nazism and Hitler and the extermination of the Jews. Well, I don't want to say anything. No, you better say something. You may want to flee for your life, but you've lost your life by not speaking. You have lost your integrity. And many of the pastors, preachers do it. Educators do it. Kids do it. Peer pressure. It can happen to any of us that you sacrifice yourself. You sacrifice your very being for political or popular expediency. If you lose your life, you find it. If you say, I'm going to do what's right, regardless of cost or consequence, I'm going to stand up for the truth, even if it means rejection and hatred, now you're free. You have now found your life. No one can threaten you because you have already died to what people think, and now you're free to do the will of God. You're free to do the right thing. It's not just kamikaze academics. This must happen in every area of society, in every single area of society. We must be willing to speak the truth regardless of cost or consequence. Now, there is wisdom. There's a time to speak and a time not to speak. Just don't let it be because you're afraid of the consequences. And we do what we do with grace. Our goal is not to be troublemakers. Some of us like to be troublemakers, just provoke a fight. But that's not going to advance a good cause ultimately. But if you'll speak the truth, trouble will come your way. Trust me. If you stand for what's right, trouble will come your way. Jesus says, blessed are those, truly happy are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. So, kamikaze academics, I like the concept. Let us translate it into every area of society. All right, let's get some feedback. We'll start in Durham, North Carolina. Paulette, what's your take about the founding of America?
Well,
are you there, Paulette?
It's my history.
Go ahead.
If I can remember my history, even though I can't talk. The people came over here from England because they were being told what to believe, and they weren't allowed to believe what they wanted to. So they came here and established religion and they wanted it established here.
So you're saying the simple purpose that they came looking for religious freedom.
Freedom of religion.
Right, so that was their first founding principle, and everything else is kind of secondary and falls into place after that. Yeah, Paulette, many would agree with you on that. Does that mean that, in your mind, that everything they did was Christian and right?
No.
Okay.
No, because when they came over here for the freedom of religion, they allowed people to be what religion they were, just as we are supposed to do now.
Got it. So here's the interesting thought, then, that there... You could look at it a couple of different ways. And Paulette, I appreciate the call, because what you're expressing is what many others would express. You could say it like this, that the goal was not to enforce Christianity on everyone, but to have a government that would give them freedom to practice their faith. And of course, with many, the assumption was that it would be the Christian faith that would be the faith of the nation, but you could not have one state church or one dominant aspect of Christianity enforced on everyone, but that there would be the freedom to practice these things. And that freedom is being tremendously challenged in our day, like never before in our history. There's no exaggeration. Like never before in our history, that freedom is being challenged. Here, just think of this for a minute. Think of this. In terms of the important role that religion played, specifically the Christian religion, in the founding of America, with all of our warts and blemishes, okay? There's no question that the Christian faith played an important role in the founding of America. And the idea that Christians in America could be discriminated against as Christians was completely unthinkable. Completely unthinkable. All right, so think of this. The governor of Nevada says, now that we're reopening things on some level with the virus, church buildings, you can have a maximum of 50 people in the building. Governor, our building seats 500. Yeah, you can have a maximum of 50 people in your service. Excuse me, Governor, our building seats 2,000. Yeah, you can have a maximum of 50 people in your building. Okay, so that's just consistent for businesses. Oh, no. If you're a casino, you can have 50% capacity. 50% capacity in the casino is fine. So I don't know how big casinos are. I mean, I've not examined them and what full capacity is. Haven't been in them. But so I don't know. Maybe the casino could have 5,000 people in at one time. So they can have 2,500. That's fine. Gambling, maybe destroying their lives, falling into heavy debt, doing whatever they do. That's fine. Keep drinking. Keep them at the tables. Okay. Maybe feed into the local prostitution, some of the gambling. Who knows? Go ahead, have at it. But church services, no, only 50 people. That is rank discrimination. Now, one church group got a great idea. Let's hold a service in the casino. Let's do that. We'll hold the service in the casino. So what happens? The casino gets fined by the governor. Gambling, fine. Worshiping the Lord, honoring Jesus, preaching from the Bible, not fine. I can guarantee you this. And yes, it was a Democratic governor that ruled in this way. In city after city, in state after state, this is just the reality. The Republicans are not the saviors, but that's just the reality, that there has been the unequal treatment of churches. You know, same in California, famously, right? Go ahead, protest. Protests are important. Go ahead and protest. But you got a church service. Not only do you have to meet all these stipulations, but you can't sing. Oh, and by the way, you can't gather in your homes for Bible studies. I mean, what kind of outrageous double standards are these? I can assure you that these kinds of attacks on our freedoms were things that would have absolutely shocked our founders. So, of course, the colonists, that's before our founders, in some cases, you know, over 150 years before. But our founding fathers, who were not just, you know, Bible bangers, you know, and just quoting the Bible, and don't just put them in our image today. And we'll find out a little bit more about them in a moment. But they never would have countenanced something like this happening in America, where freedom, religion is so essential. Shake the nation.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is the big question these days, the question that's constantly before us, the founding of our nation, founding of America. How Christian were we? Were we founded from more principles of Enlightenment philosophy than biblical principles? And did we violate biblical principles as hypocrites and slave owners and racists and so on? Robert Riley joined me a few years ago. We discussed his important book, Making Gay Okay. He was a former special assistant to President Ronald Reagan. He was director of Voice of America. One more thing in his bio caught my eye. Oh, yeah. A senior advisor for information strategy to the Secretary of Defense and taught at National Defense University. He has a brand new book out, America on Trial, A Defense of the Founding. And I thought, well, we've got to get Robert Riley on here to discuss this. So, Robert, welcome back to The Line of Fire. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me back. It's great to be with you again.
Well, sir, tell us in what sense America is on trial. Who's putting America on trial? What are we on trial about? And what's your role in the trial?
Well, I think I'm standing for the defense of the American founding and its principles. And we're on trial from almost every sector of American society. The fact that we're on trial from the left and in the streets with the rioters and demonstrators is apparent to everyone. But we're also on trial from some Christian conservative circles who are saying, well, we're in this state of moral degradation today because of the principles of founding, because they were contaminated by radical enlightenment principles of individual autonomy. And as Christianity recedes in this country, so the manifestation of this radical individualism becomes more manifest in homosexual so-called marriage, drugs, dissolution of the family, etc.
All right, so the argument would be that the problems in America today tie back to its defective founding, and you would say that our problems are a result of straying from the founding? Is that an oversimplification?
No, I think that's my thesis. By the way, I'm getting a huge echo when I talk to you.
Yeah, we are aware of that, and if it continues, we'll just have to fix the call and reschedule. I've become aware of that problem, so my apologies to you. I'm not hearing it, but it appears that others are, and I've had that during interviews, and it's terribly distracting. So if it continues another minute or two, we will just get you back on. We'll reschedule so we can hear you loud and clear. I don't want this to be compromised in any way, all right?
Thank you.
Let's give it one more shot. If you're hearing an echo, we'll just cut the interview right here. But how long did you work on this book? Has this been something you've been focused on for many years that kind of came to a head in light of the current cultural situation?
Well, the idea for the book first arose about 5 years ago. It's not something I had the opportunity to work continuously on. And I would say it's kind of serendipitous that it came out just when it did this spring, because I think it meets a profound need, particularly in a world where both sides of the political spectrum are saying that there was a morally compromised founding. On the left, the New York Times gives us the 1619 Project, when Englishmen first brought slaves to the American colonies and said, that's it. Racism is the foundation of the United States. The absurdities to which people go to make a case like this, when obviously slavery was antithetical to the American founding, which announced that all men are created equal. If I could just dwell on the slavery issue for a moment, because it's become so big.
Please.
Slavery was universal, practiced everywhere for millennia, for as long as recorded history. There was slavery everywhere. So the question shouldn't concern, well, here's a group of slaves being brought to the American colonies. It should be, how is it that the country that was founded on the principle that all men are created equal eliminated slavery? That's the interesting thing. How was it that it occurred to men that slavery is a moral evil that needs to be extirpated with prudence over time? And of course, that's what was provided for in the American founding, which, by the way, doesn't in its constitution mention the word slavery, because slavery was considered such a moral evil, even by those men who had slaves, that they didn't want it contaminating the Constitution. Between the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, measures were taken for all the states north of the Mason-Dixon line and north of the Ohio River to eliminate slavery or put in place measures that led to its elimination. The Northwest Ordinance, which ruled the new territories in the upper Midwest and the Midwest, stated that slavery was there forever banned. And the Constitution itself provided for the possibility of a law in 1808 to eliminate the international slave trade, which indeed it did, and 12 years later made trading in slaves internationally a capital crime. So this was there from the beginning. Alas, it couldn't be resolved peacefully, but in the terrible tragedy of the American Civil War, which finally brought about its end in the 13th and 14th Amendments. So people who try to bring down the United States as a progenitor of slavery are doing so in the utter ignorance of the fact that it was the United States that ended slavery, as against the almost universal practice in the rest of the world, except England, which also ended slavery. Okay, I got that off my chest.
All right, so let me go to something that's right in the foreword. It's a great foreword written to your book. Quoting from the Federalist Papers, the first paragraph of the Federalist says that Americans are appointed, quote, to decide the important question whether societies of men are really capable or not of establishing good government from reflection and choice, or whether they are forever destined to depend for their political constitutions on accident and force. So what was the intentionality behind the founding of the United States of America, and what was unique about it?
What was unique was precisely the opportunity to do exactly that, to found a country. Can a country be founded through reflection and choice, through reasonable consideration of what is the best regime, what is the best we can do as human beings under these circumstances to create a country based upon the principles of justice and freedom? And it was through that consideration in the Declaration, of course, after the victory of the Revolutionary War, that the great Constitutional Convention created a document which was absolutely unique in the history of the world, which was a dual sovereignty with the federal government and the sovereignty of the individual states. When people talk about or scorn what's called American exceptionalism, they usually don't know what American exceptionalism means. It means exactly this, that until that point, you couldn't point to another founding of a regime in history that had the opportunity to create a new nation through reflection and choice. They were all, to some degree, the product of accident and force. And this points to the key thing about the nature of the United States, and that is the primacy of reason, the status of reason to rule, not the primacy of the will, which is what the whole American Revolution was against, as they were being ruled without their own consent. And as rational creatures with free will, they said this was against both the laws of nature and of nature's God, and they were justified in a revolution against Great Britain because they were being treated as less than human. Right, so the long struggle...
Go ahead.
Yeah, but, you know, there's what I try to do in this book, the major part of it tries to answer the question, how is it that the American founding became conceivable? From where did the ideas that made it possible come? Who thought them up, and in what circumstances, and with what repercussions? And that brings me to the, it brings me back to the pre-philosophical world, the tribal world, so we have some contrast as to what things were like before the existence of philosophy in the Greek world, which discovered that through man's reason he could come to know truth, and the truth was universal. It wasn't dependent on what tribe you belonged to. There was a truth everywhere, at all times, for everyone. Now, along with this was another revolutionary, revelation. Uh-huh. In ancient Jerusalem, that there was actually not many gods, but only one, and that he was transcendent, and that he did a most extraordinary thing in creating man as in his own image and likeness, as Genesis tells us. That's unique amongst the religions, certainly of the Middle East at the time, or of the world, that the man has something sacred about him, something inviolable, because he's made in the divine image.
All right, I'm going to jump in. Robert, if you can just stay over after the break, I've got to ask you a follow-up question. Important new book, Robert Riley, America on Trial, in Defense of the Founding. It's a fascinating, in-depth read.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
The book, like you think, is over 300 pages. Robert Riley, the author, America on Trial, A Defense of the Founding. Robert, my PhD was in Near Eastern Languages and Literatures from New York University. So that meant I was reading literature from the ancient Near East. And while you have many parallels with ancient Near Eastern literature and biblical literature, the things that stand out dramatically. I mean, you read Genesis 1 and think, where did anyone get this from? When you read the creation accounts from the other parts of the world and the different gods warring with each other, you read the words of the prophets, you say, where'd they get this from? It's so transcendent, and the way human beings are looked at and the way God is understood and viewed. You're saying that's the ultimate root, going back to the God of the Bible, even the God of ancient Israel, that paves the way for America being what America is at its very, very best? That's how far back you trace it?
Oh, I think so. The founders themselves very clearly looked back to ancient Israel and to the covenant they had with God as a model. They were inspired by it. John Adams said as much as he loved the ancient Greeks and philosophy, he loved the Jews even more and thought their contribution to civilization was the greatest. But, of course, it was Christ, the revelation of his incarnation, mm-hmm. that brought a conjoining of both Greek philosophy and Jewish monotheism together in a reconciliation of reason and faith, let's put it, and a universalization of Jewish monotheism, with the addition that God introduces himself in the Gospel of St. John. In the beginning was the Word. Word was with God, and the Word was God. All things are made through him. Word, of course, in Greek was logos, which means reason, as you know, or word. So we know now why there's a rational order in creation. It's because God himself is this divine intelligence, this reason. But he's also agape. He's this overflowing sacrificial love. And added to what Genesis in place of the divine image in each human being, we learn through Christian revelation that each individual is the object of infinite love. Each person is irreplaceable, and each person has a destiny through Christ in God's life. And that is, doesn't go through the ancient city, doesn't go through the cosmological empires. Each individual person has a relationship with this Savior God. So it removes from the political order any salvific enterprise. The state politics is forever deflated because salvation comes through this personal relationship with Christ, which is quite outside the state. And without that revelation, and that famous remark that give to Caesar what is Caesar and to God what is God, we wouldn't have such a thing as what the secular. We wouldn't have a church and state that are understood as independent of each other, where the state cannot rule the church, but the church has its own integrity and independence, and the state has no salvific role. This is, without that understanding, such a thing as constitutionalism would never have arisen, because otherwise there wouldn't have been a limitation on the state.
Right, so all this factors in a practical way that fleshes out into the life of a nation. And you know, Robert, as I'm hearing you speak, and friends, get the book. We're just barely getting the tip of the iceberg here. America on Trial, A Defense of the Founding, Robert Riley, the author. Robert, as I'm listening to you, what I'm just thinking is, okay, here's the reality. You have a bunch of people forming a nation, and they're people, so flawed people, and not all of them even professing Christian. You have people of different backgrounds, and none of them perfect Christians, trying to do something together. So the principles, the high and lofty principles, are the things that we're focusing on and then that we're called to live up to. And when we understand that's when we can understand the high and lofty principles of the founding, even though we fall short of them, that's what gets, by holding to them, it's what gets us where we need to go. Robert, thanks for joining us. I'm sure we'll talk again, but blessings on your ongoing work and research. Keep up the good work. I appreciate it, sir.
And you too. Thank you so much.
All right. Yeah, I mean, it's a simple thing when you think about it, right? Was it a Christian nation? Well, there's never been anyone perfectly Christian. Jesus is the only perfect one that lived on this earth, right? And you have a bunch of people coming together, found a nation. Some are not even believers in God, or they don't believe in the God of the Bible. And so you got this mixture coming together. So of course it's going to be mixed. Yeah. All right, I want to grab a few calls before we are done, but be sure to check out my new article, AskDrBrown.org, Stream.org, other websites. Does the church need a President Kamala Harris to fully awaken us? Because here's my concern. All those who feel that a vote for President Trump will be a vote for religious liberty, a vote for President Trump will be a vote for pro-life, a vote for President Trump will be a vote to push back against radical LGBT extremism in the laws. A vote for Donald Trump would be a vote to stand with Israel against Islamic terrorism and things like that. That if he gets reelected, are you going to think, well, that's going to solve the problems? It's going to solve problems. As I've said repeatedly, And as I was preaching this past Sunday, people actually stood to their feet when I made this statement. I was talking about my new book, Evangelicals at the Crossroads, and in that context made the statement that even if President Trump is the right candidate, at best he's like a wedge in the door, like a human wedge in the door to stop it from slamming. And the church better awaken. But I've seen it's taken some of these extreme as COVID-19 to get many churches to awaken from slumber and start to think about being the church in their communities, not just going to church services, and to awaken others to stand against unrighteousness in the government, whereas before they're like, well, I don't know how much we can say. Now there's been a stirring. So will it take, if it's a President Biden, we know he's become more extremely left in his policies, but how long would he be able to govern? Would it be President Kamala Harris? And as militantly anti-life as any candidate we've ever had, a friend of mine, native California, wrote this to me. He said, she terrifies me. At least Biden has a purported Catholic faith and takes a pragmatic view regarding his political stance on abortion, whereas Harris is vehemently anti-life in every conceivable way. Is that what is going to be necessary to get the church to wake up? I hope not. Let the will of God be done in the elections. Let's vote accordingly to what we feel is right. But I hope we will recognize that 4 more years of Donald Trump will not save America by any stretch of any imagination. I'm a broken record on this. We must awaken. All right, let me grab some more calls before we're done. Let's go over to Austin, Texas. Jacob, welcome to the Line of Fire. What's your take on the founding of America or the nature of America?
It's pretty simple. I really appreciate you having me on. Thank you, Dr. Brown.
Sure.
Been listening to you for a long time. But, yeah, I mean, it's quite simple. The foundation of our nation has been rooted in the Word of God. If you look at the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, it is very apparent. Not only that, but the founding fathers spent days trying to figure out what they were going to do, and they tried several different things, and nothing was coming together. They took a 3-day break. They all fasted and prayed, and when they came back together, all the founding fathers that signed that Constitution, it's like it was the hand of God was putting it together because it all came together. Now, there were some things with the Constitution that when they were writing it, they didn't understand, or they believed that there was more rights that needed to be had, and that's where the Bill of Rights came from, and that came afterwards. And these are the things that our founding fathers found in the Word of God, saying, this is what God has mandated, and said, these are what mankind should have, and then after that, what we want our government to have. And we didn't want a government, because we just came from that, right? England, they were doing everything they can, or everything they wanted to, with the king, and they were able to trample on the rights of the people. And our founding fathers did not want that.
All right,
so they wanted
so
the principles
just
of God to be founded and rooted in the natural law.
All right, hang on. Maybe you weren't hearing the question I wanted to ask. But would you say that the principles were there, that the principles were rightly laid out that led then to full equality for women and later liberation of slaves and equality of all colors? Or would you say that the principles... were they blind to those principles? Because you have somewhat of a mix. Unfortunately, I won't get to get your answer to that. And other calls just looking found it with Christian principles we didn't live up to. I think as we look back, we have to look back with pragmatism and realism. We have to, and I appreciate your input, Jacob. We have to look back and recognize again that this is not the Bible, and that this is not the kingdom of God on earth, and it's not utopia. But the principles on which we were founded are excellent principles, which, if lived out, can still lead to America being a great nation that can bless the world, even though it will never be entirely Christian, as will nowhere on the earth until Jesus comes and establishes his kingdom.